Hi, I'm Reagan, and thanks for listening to my dad's podcast, Lasting Learning.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Hey, Dave here, and I'm super excited about this new mini-series that's happening within the Lasting Learning podcast. We're calling it Grin and Bear It. It's featuring myself and my good friend Caitlin Giordano as we poke the bear. We entertain some of the most taboo conversations around education, encouraging you to engage in the conversations with us. So sit back, relax, comment, vent, cuss us out in your head, or even reach out to us in person and disagree. I hope you enjoy. Grin and bear it. All right, everybody. This is the moment that I have been waiting for I can't tell you how long. You know, I've had a podcast for years and years and years. I've had conversations with the amazing Caitlin Giordano over and over and over again. But it's rare that we bring one of our debates, one of our disagreements to light. Oftentimes we're lockstep, we're singing kumbaya, we're smiling, but today I don't think it's going to be that way. I have a feeling today we're going to have a conversation that we might leave here fully respecting each other, but neither one of us necessarily bending a little bit, because this is one of those poking the bear conversations. Caitlin and I are big believers that there are no taboo topics in education, that we tend to shut our doors and shut our mouths way too often instead of leaning into the critical conversations that we need to have. As educators, our job is to model the expected behaviors, and we are not big fans of canceling each other out. Instead, we want to have conversations with each other. So we thought we would put our time and our, I don't know, I was going to say money where our mouth is, but I don't have money. So maybe you got money, Caitlin. I don't. But today we're going to have a conversation. And again, we're going to poke the bear a little bit. We're going to encourage other people to lean into this conversation as well. This is the first of many of these conversations. We have a list of things that we disagree on that we want to bring to light. But we also know other people might have things that they want us to discuss and debate as well. And we're going to be encouraging people to weigh in and come into the conversations with us as we go. So Caitlin, I don't know if you need to set this up any more than what I just did, other than to say, do you have the fireworks lit? Do you have the matches ready to go? Because this is going to be interesting.
Oh, I'm ready, Dave. I can't wait. I just also want to clarify that you are the bear that I will be poking. I'm just
kidding. Rawr. Okay. I'm a koala bear, though. I'm one of those cute little fluffy things that doesn't move very fast. I just hang out and smile and people wave. And no, this is going to be fun. You know, this is inspired by our new book, Poking the Bear, which I know we'll talk a lot about, but that's not necessarily the purpose of this conversation. We're not here to sell copies of the book, but if you want to go buy it, feel free. But the book is one where we are trying to encourage people to have the conversations. You know, there are lots and lots and lots of books out there these days, lots of people writing what they believe to be the answers to all the things. Actually, I went up and did a little research before we came on. Let me look at my little yellow cheat sheet. Do you realize that there were 4 million books published in 2022? 4 million.
Holy cow.
Right. So that means there's a lot of people that think they have the answers to all the things. There are also currently 2.4 million podcasts that are available out on the airwaves or the digital waves or however that works, which equates to 66 million episodes. So there are a lot of people thinking they have a lot of answers to a lot of things. Now, you and I have opinions and we think that we're pretty smart people, but that's not what this is about. This isn't about us saying, here's the answer to anything. Instead, it's us saying, here's our personal opinions, disagree, push back, lean in. But we want to try to amplify other people's voices and give other people the opportunity to share their thoughts, because there are a whole lot of people out there smarter than me, you being one of them. And that's what we want to try to encourage. We want to try to encourage other people to lean into the conversations and not to feel this divide of right, wrong, good, bad, black, white, whatever. Just lean in. Let's have these conversations and let's try to figure out where where to meet in the middle and still how to have mutual respect for each other. So
absolutely. I think that's the unique part about our perspective and even our book is just that we both kind of subscribe to the notion that like the smartest person in the room is the room. Like you and I might fully disagree about a particular topic and not really come into a conversation thinking we're going to change the other person's mind. At least I know that's like how I'm coming into this conversation here. Like my goal today is not to change your mind.
Well, that's good because you're not going to.
It's not to make you think what I think, but it is to be able to engage in a dialogue with one another where we might think completely opposite things and walk away from this understanding the other person's perspective a little bit better and maybe even understanding our own a little bit better, because that's one of my favorite things about having conversations with people that don't agree with me is that I can have an open mind enough to understand and listen and engage with what somebody else thinks, but then also be able to communicate my own side of things and maybe think of an aspect of what I believe that I hadn't really considered before. I think that's just an important piece to walk into a conversation with, especially one where you know it might be a little contentious or a little bit difficult, is maybe your goal shouldn't be to change the person's mind. And maybe your goal should just be to engage and to listen. And yes, to also share what you think and to develop that perspective, but also to understand a different one, because that is how we get better. It's how we grow. It's how we change things, is by understanding that there are different perspectives out there. And being a classroom teacher, like I hear that a lot, like, oh, I want my students to develop an understanding of different viewpoints and different perspectives. And that's such a phenomenal thing to want to encourage in your students. It's huge. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. But I sometimes wonder like how often we do that ourselves. And how often we are willing to do that ourselves. Like it's a skill we want our students to learn, and that's great, but it's really hard to teach something that you don't also do.
That's good. Yeah. You know, I get the opportunity to go into a lot of schools in a lot of places, and I see those mission statements behind the office on the office walls that say things about creating lifelong learners. And, you know, the very essence of being a learner means that your mind is changing, right? Things are growing, evolving, new synapses and neural connections and pathways are being developed. So changing your mind changing is not a bad thing. It simply means you're learning. It simply means you're growing. It means you're practicing what you preach. It means you're living out that mission statement. So don't be afraid of being considered a flip-flopper or whatever the case may be, simply because you change your mind. That is the essence of learning, is changing what's happening in your mind. So
absolutely.
I'm excited to see if you can do this for me, if you can change my mind, because you know, we come from different perspectives, right? You're currently a classroom teacher. I spent most of my career in administration. You are female, I'm a male. You currently live in a blue state. I currently live in a red state. God help us both. You're currently in the Midwest. I am down in Florida. So just knowing some of that, people already are siding with you, which I get, because I live in the heart of crazy. I live where the sun is baking our brains a little bit too much. The administrator side of things probably has me a little bit jaded and twisted. So I get all of that. But labels aside, I'm ready to lean in and see if you can grow me a little bit.
I agree. I'm ready too. I'm excited to hear what you have to say about this.
Okay. So let's tee this up. So yes. I tend to put things out on social media to quote unquote poke the bear, right? I say a lot of things that I firmly believe, but I also say some things just to try to start some conversation and to start some dialogue. I've said quite a few things that have gotten people fired up. And it's interesting. I'll watch my follower numbers climb rapidly and all of a sudden they just drop. Because people are like, I'm not engaging in that conversation, which, whatever. Our goal is to have people engage in the conversation. But recently, I put something out on TikTok and Instagram and Reels and all of those things. It was basically me rambling and ranting for about 3 minutes, saying something that you heard and you're like, ho, Dave, we need to talk. And we haven't even had this conversation yet, right? So this is going to be completely organic. You just heard it and you're like, let's talk. And I said, let's hit record and have that conversation live. Right. So the very essence, just at the surface level of my rant, was reading is overrated. Right. At the very surface, it's reading is overrated. And I go on for 3 minutes talking about how we put way too much emphasis on reading in schools. And I gave my own perspective on it. I gave my own opinions on it. And there were a few people, quite a few people actually, that leaned in and said, wow, I'm glad you said that, but I could never go public and say those things. And then there were probably twice as many people that jumped in and said, Dave, you're an idiot. You're a moron. You've been in education for 2.5 decades. You've got a doctorate and you're saying this stuff. You are complete stupidity. So I'm curious, Galen, I know kind of where your head is, but I'm curious. When I say that reading is overrated, where does your head go?
So my first immediate reaction is, who hurt you? No, I'm just kidding. My first reaction is, it's something that I've been trying to develop more and more as I've engaged in conversations, but it's curiosity. And it's a curiosity for where that opinion came from and what specifically you mean by overrated. And I just want to pause the conversation momentarily here for everybody that's listening and say that this step for me was the hardest step to start introducing into my way of engaging with people. Because my immediate reaction, I'm a very fiery, very passionate person. And when I believe something, I believe it. Like with every fiber of my being, I believe it. And I think everybody else should agree with me because I am always right. And so it is very difficult for me to have developed this aspect of engaging in conversations with people and to take a step back and be like, let's not immediately attack somebody and let's instead engage with curiosity. So when you say something like reading is overrated, I am an English teacher. It's literally half of the subject I teach is reading. And so my initial reaction is what? But then it's also, okay, I wonder why. Like, I wonder what the background on this feeling is. And I wonder what overrated means, because it could mean so many different things. And if I immediately apply my understanding of what that means, I'm shutting you out of this conversation completely because I don't even know what you're saying to me. I am applying my own understanding to it. So I guess my first step here would be, Dave, like, what do you mean by overrated?
So let me set the stage here. So I'm currently talking to you in my home office where I'm surrounded by probably 1,000 books on bookshelves that surround my room. The only wall that doesn't have books on them is the one right behind me, but every other wall, books. And I have read all of them. I personally love to read. It's where I go to learn. It's where I go to relax. It's where I go to reflect. I love just opening up. Like, I don't even do the Kindle digital version. Like, I need to have the paper in front of my hand so I can flip the pages. I buy books as opposed to going to the library because I want to be able to, once I'm done reading them, put it on the bookshelf like a trophy. Hey, I did that. I learned that. You can truly see my brain in my office when you look around on the bookshelf. So I personally love to read. Okay? So we'll put that there. However, I also know that as a former administrator, I fell for a trap early on in my administrative career, where I truly believed that my job, you've heard this before, was to create itty bitty schmitties, to create people that thought and did things and behaved just like me. As an administrator, I wanted my teachers to teach like I taught. When I was a teacher, I wanted my students to value the things that I valued. As a parent, I often look at my kids and say, why don't you think the things that I think are important are important? So I have consciously, for the last decade or so, put intentional thought and action behind, is this something that it works best for me? Or is this truly a best practice for all? And I have really examined this idea of reading as being something that is best for me, not necessarily best for all. So when I say it is overrated, the term overrated, number one, I am going to say you probably interpreted it correctly. I think we put too much value and stock behind it. I think we weigh it too heavily in our schools. I think that we are looking at a source of learning as though it is the outcome of learning. We measure it as though it's the outcome as opposed to a tool. I truly believe that the purpose of school is to learn social studies and science, and reading and math are the tools to help understand social studies and science, because social studies and science, that's the world. Reading and math are man-made mechanisms to help us understand those phenomena.
Okay, so I actually am loving what you're saying right now, because our approaches and our philosophies about education are very similar. the idea that we do need to reconsider, like, is this my own value that I'm instilling in my students, or is this truly something that's best for everybody? So when you say all of these things about reading being overrated and your reasons, I'm actually not finding a ton that I disagree with, which I find interesting because I thought I would disagree with a lot of what you're saying.
All right, we're done. I win. You just said I won, right?
Oh, yeah, you totally won. But I would challenge your perception of what it means to be a reader. So there's a couple of things that you mentioned that I do take issue with and that I do believe are, for lack of a better phrase, a little close-minded when you consider reading. So when we think about reading, like personally, I used to share that belief that like I needed the book. And like, obviously I have a lot of books, they're all behind me. And this is not even my whole collection. But when we think about reading, there's so many different ways to engage with reading. I used to be a diehard, I need the physical book in my hands. I have to have it. And then I have to put it on my shelf as a trophy, like you said. But since I got a Kindle 6 years ago, I have read more because I am able to get more books to me easier. I check them all up from the library because it's free. So my access to them is greater. I'm able to get more books because I don't have to pay for them. There's not a financial barrier there, which I think would also be present for a lot of our students who might have that financial barrier otherwise. But the big thing that I would say is that reading at the end of the day is just a way to consume information and make sense of what we're consuming as we're consuming it. Whether the purpose be for entertainment, for learning, whatever that might be, we're consuming information in some way. And this is something that I've started being very vocal about at my school, but that would be that audiobooks are reading. You are still reading a book. You are still engaging with that content. So when we think about different ways to engage in reading, it's not just one size fits all. And we all have a different reading life that we can develop. And don't get me wrong, there's still going to be people that are like, I do not find joy in this. There's nothing about this that serves me. And that may be well and true and 100% valid to feel. There is still a function to being able to listen or read and comprehend. And that's the part that I don't think we acknowledge enough in schools, is that it's not, I need to make a bunch of kids like reading, or I need to make a bunch of kids read this amount every day, every year, whatever. It's not that I need all my students to read at this particular level because some test tells me so. It's, can my kids, my students find a way to consume information that works for them? Can they discover a podcast, an audiobook, an ebook, a physical book, whatever it might be, that they are able to engage with fully and walk away from it with some new understanding or some revelation, whether that be reading isn't so bad or I can engage in content and understand it. It just might not be the same way as everybody else.
So I want to expand on this, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm going to expand on the actual debate we're having right now, not even the nuance of how we're having this debate, because you're doing an amazing job of articulating that and teaching me some things here. But this idea of reading, and I loved, first of all, how you set it up and you stated very quickly, okay, I thought we were going to disagree, but maybe not, because sometimes we take those sound bites, those tweets that are so many characters, and we start to make these huge value judgments, thinking that we understand every single thought that was going through a person's head when they had to synthesize it down to just a few characters and few letters. We do have a lot of things in common in this conversation, which I think is something important for us to hold on to. But there's also some things right now that I'm holding on to that I think we have in common that maybe others completely disagree with. And this might bring other people into this conversation. You shifted some of your terminology in the last thing that you were just stating. And as opposed to focusing on reading and text, you started talking about content, which I think is fascinating. So as a guy who I spent some time as a secondary administrator and some time as an elementary administrator, I was a middle school language arts teacher and a middle school social studies teacher. When I was at the elementary level, when people were teaching reading, they spend a lot of time teaching the quote unquote science of reading, which is, you know, teaching phonemic awareness and fluency and comprehension. And but at my schools, they always focused on the 26 letters of the English alphabet and the 45 plus sounds of the English alphabet when teaching reading. Like, they never taught Mandarin or Spanish or German and taught the skill sets of dissecting, comprehending, evaluating content. It was always focused on the arbitrary sounds of the English alphabet, as though when you learn how to put those sounds together, now all of a sudden you are a reader. Somebody that focuses really at the secondary level, though, you're not focusing on that aspect of reading. You're focusing on the critical thinking that goes along with it. And you're not just focusing on text, you're focusing on content. And you mentioned podcasts and audiobooks in your answer. So a question I have for you, Caitlin.
Yeah.
Is it possible to sit down and just chill on some Netflix, just to binge on your favorite Netflix show and say, don't bother me, I'm reading, when you're watching Netflix? Is that the same thing?
I don't think so. And I have a hard time like really breaking down what the difference is. So I'm glad that you brought this up, because it is something that I'm like, okay, where does that difference lie? And it's something I feel like I need to suss out for sure, because that to me is different. And I don't know if I can articulate fully why, but it definitely is a different type of media. And I think that might be where my distinction comes in, is that it is a visual media. It is like an entertainment media. It's a show versus a different type. Like I would even consider like podcasts almost like a very different type of media. I don't know that if a kiddo is listening to a podcast, I'm going to consider that reading. But when I think about like even certain fiction podcasts, I'm like, okay, but this is really similar to experiencing an audiobook or things like that. So I feel like for me, that is definitely a distinction that I need to think a little bit more deeply about, because I wouldn't call that reading at all.
Okay. So let's get rid of the Netflix idea, because this is, so for me, this is the essence of my debate with this. Mm-hmm. I think that we spend so much time teaching the tool that we forget about the ultimate purpose behind the tool, which is to teach critical thinking, to teach creativity, to teach communication, to teach collaboration, like to teach the big C's, if you will. We're so focused on the tool and the mechanism behind it. We say the only way to learn this is reading. I remember I used to say, like, we would read To Kill a Mockingbird, for example, and I'd say, don't watch the movie version, just focus on the novel, which is, I want you to have the thought. I want you to have the debate. I want you to engage in it. But I was so focused on the textual fluency that I lost sight of all the rest. So in schools and in classrooms, you know, we are the facilitators and the curators of what text or what content is available. Again, full transparency, I live in a crazy state where lots of things are being banned, and I feel like there's book burnings on a daily basis, and media specialists are no longer helping curate and foster kids' curiosities. They're now being told that they have to start deleting things from the shelves and scrap and put things in the scrap heap, which is a whole nother conversation that we probably don't even need to have right now. But feel free to weigh in on it if you have opinions. I think this is also interesting, because as educators, not only are we looking at the media in which students are gaining their insights, Netflix, movies versus paper copies versus Kindle, oftentimes we are the ones that decide which text is worthy of consumption. And we start telling kids that the book has to be at a certain grade level, or has to have so many such and such vocabulary, or it needs to be in no pictures or 100 pages or more, whatever the case may be. Or it has to be one of our personal favorite books. How do we decide what text is worthy of reading, and which text to just kick down the road to let kids figure out on their own?
Okay, so I'm really glad you asked me that, because this is the crux of my argument. You don't. You 100% do not decide that for kids, ever. You can encourage. So like, I am a huge fan of a like reading conference or conversation, or being able to set goals with my students. So I use a lot of like reading data in my classroom, but it's not data that I keep. It's data that my students keep. and it's data that they determine what they're keeping track of. So it's different things that help them then set goals. And when I explain it to them, I use one of our favorite analogies, and that's running. If you don't know what your mile time is, you can't tell yourself how to improve or what you would like to improve to, because you don't have any information about where you are right now. So there's no way for you to say, I'm going to get better, because what does better mean? We don't know. So we talk a lot in my classroom about, what does it mean to be a better reader? Well, it's going to mean something different to every single kid in my classroom. And so it is not for me to sit back and say, all of you need to read this book. All of you need to read books that don't have any pictures in them. All of you need to read at least this many pages, this many minutes, whatever, this week, this year, this month. That is not how I view teaching reading at all. And I think that's where the big piece of my argument will come in, is that there's a lot of value in teaching kids to understand themselves as readers. And then to take that a step further, to understand themselves as content consumers, to understand what different types of media there are and how to engage with them in different ways. So while it is definitely true that I wouldn't say like, oh yeah, watching a Netflix show is reading, I do teach my students about different types of media, including watching shows, including listening to podcasts, and yes, traditional reading a book. But it's the idea that we are learning about ourselves, that we are learning about the things that work for us, that we are really working to just be better consumers of content, be better people that understand and can engage in the world around us. And I do think that comes with a lot of responsibility, but you also have to like let go a little bit. My favorite book is not going to be my kid's favorite book. Like some of them, it might be, because we have similar backgrounds, similar experiences, similar beliefs, similar values. And in that case, that's amazing. And I can recommend that book to them. But the minute that I tell every single kid that this book is the best book ever and they all need to engage with it, I'm eliminating or ignoring so many other different backgrounds, experiences, value sets, et cetera, because I'm applying my own to every kid in the room. And that's not what we need to be doing at all.
And so this is truly the heart of the conversation for me. When I say reading is overrated, I basically mean we measure it completely incorrectly, and we put way too much emphasis on fluency, phonemic awareness, and the components of reading the English language, as opposed to the purpose behind reading, which is ultimately making sense of the world or gaining perspective of the world, right? So again, I now live in Florida. I first came to Florida 7 years ago for my first stint down here, where I was working in what they called a turnaround school. It was a school that had traditionally underperformed compared to lots of other schools around it. And one of the reasons we were considered underperforming is because of how we were assessed on the big, scary end of the year assessment. And the big focus was on student reading proficiency or reading growth. Well, at the end of my first year, I did one of those things that we're not supposed to do. I actually took a look at the test to say, what is actually on this test that my kids continue to fail? And again, that's taboo. You're not supposed to ever be able to see the questions. But I did. Whatever. Fire me. I already quit. Do what you got to do. So one of the things I realized is that, again, the school was in Florida. We were about a mile and a half from the beach. There was a reading passage for our fifth graders that described the beach. It described sand dunes and erosion and had a lot of terminology that I fully understood. Even though my school was a mile and a half from the beach, though, I realized and learned very quickly that about 90% of my kids had never been to the beach. We served three major housing projects. The kids lived within their quote unquote bubble, and they had no context. They had no idea, even though that the rest of the state of Florida goes to the beach and they spend all their time outside looking at sand dunes, my kiddos had no perspective of that. And their reading scores were not necessarily based off of whether or not they could pull the text off of the page and if they could sound out the letters and the words. It was because they had no conceptual awareness of what those words meant. So in order to increase our reading scores, the state sent in their experts to say, hey, here's the drill and kill worksheet your kids need. They all need help with phonemic awareness and fluency. I said, no, we're going to go on a field trip to the beach. And we took the kids to the beach. So now when they read the words, they could paint these mental pictures in their heads of what the words meant. And I think that is where we miss the mark. We spend so much time teaching our kids how to make sense of these arbitrary symbols, as opposed to giving them tools to understand the world. And that is one of the major crux of my conversation, is that we tend to look at all these correlations that say kids that read more, learn more. When the reality is the kids that read more are the kids who experience the world more. And that's this missing piece of the puzzle, is we say, just keep reading, 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 and your scores will go up. No, no, no. Start living, 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 and you will want to read to learn more about the world that you're experiencing. And we miss that step. That's the thing that's going to shore up the divide, if there is one. You want kids to make sense of the world? Show them the world. Reading used to be the only way to do that 400 years ago, when people had no way to go travel, where they had no way to see the world, where there weren't moving pictures, aka movies and Netflix. You only had the written word, and it was the great equalizer. But guess what, people? We've evolved. We have other means and mechanisms now to see the world. We actually have cars, we have airplanes, we have moving pictures, we have podcasts. There are lots of ways to teach kids about the world that have nothing to do with pulling words off of a page. So when I say it's overrated when we say it is the tool as opposed to a tool. And we need to start treating it like a tool and stop measuring the one and only tool that somebody else said was the great equalizer.
Okay. And I love that you're saying that, because I don't take issue with any of that you're saying. Like, it absolutely is true that our kids need experiences. They need to understand things differently. And frankly, reading is not going to be the one way that works the best for all of them. 100%. I would contend that reading might be a more accessible way for some of them. And that is where I push the idea that we should have our kids engaging with texts. One that, yes, they choose, they agree with, they want, they pick for themselves. But we should also be providing not required texts. Let me be clear. We are not requiring anyone to read anything in my class ever. But providing different types of material for them. Different books that explain different perspectives, that take place in different places around the world, that show different experiences for kids that aren't like them, for kids that don't have what they have, that don't have the same background. If we can get to a point where kids are open to that, where they are willing to engage, it's a more accessible way, because not everybody can go see the whole world. Like, that's just the fact. They can via different types of media, and we should be using that to our advantage as well. But if we can help them make a connection through a book, an audiobook, a podcast, what have you, we're winning. We're doing the thing, because it is the idea that we need our kids to develop greater perspectives. We need them to see the world, experience different things, and get these experiences in a way that works for them, in a way that they can understand, in a way that they can connect with. A lot of the times books can provide that. And this is just like, it's kind of a side note, but it also, I think, fits into what we're doing and the conversation that we're having. Because when we think of the ways that we teach reading, you've mentioned this a couple of times, like fluency, phonemic awareness, or if you're at the secondary level, teaching the same list of canonical classics, you're not doing that. You're not helping your students experience the world or engage in something that's going to provide an experience for them. You're just continuing to drill the same things that frankly don't matter that much. Do I sit back and think to myself, like, I wonder how fluent of a reader I am? Like, how many words can I read out loud with great pronunciation and in a certain amount of time? That's literally never something that happens. And I've gotten hand slapped a couple of times for requesting that we take fluency goals off of kids' IEPs, because I don't think fluency is what we need to be focusing on literally ever. I don't know anybody that really needs a fluency goal Or even just a phonemic awareness goal half the time. If you can get a kid listening to an audiobook, they are reading a book. That is just, it just is. There's no fluency required in that. There's no phonemic awareness required in that. We don't need to be decoding or interpreting symbols on a page. We're listening to a story or to an informational text, whatever that might be. We're engaging. That's the point of it. We're not sitting back and saying we all need to develop a certain level of fluency in order to move on. We all need to be able to like read a certain number of words on a page and be able to comprehend them in a certain amount of time. And I think we're coming very close to that argument that our assessment system is completely misguided, because those are the things that it's testing. It's not how well you read or how well you engage or how well you can understand. It's how quickly can you do this in a set amount of time.
Where do I go with this one? So one of the comments that I got on my TikTok about this, somebody said, Dave, you will never win any political offices with those views. And they're 100% right. Right. It is perceived now to be educationally advantageous to have these strict mandates to say, for example, there's third grade retention laws in virtually every state now, that if a kid is not reading at grade level by third grade, they are held back. And what they're doing to measure third grade reading proficiency is looking at, can a kid take these arbitrary symbols off of a page and make meaning out of them, as opposed to, can you critically think, can you look at this content and make some evaluations, judgments, and synthesize information, right? So I wonder, and I think, what would be different if we started measuring those things? They're, again, the ultimate measures. We want to see if kids can transfer knowledge, if they have leverage, if they are critical thinkers and not just passive consumers. What if instead of making every single kid read passages, if they had options, you can read it, you can watch it, you can listen to it, you lots of different methodologies to gain the same information to still walk away with critical thinking. But we say politically that if a kid is not reading in third grade, I'm drawing the line in the sand because I want to make sure that our kids can continue to learn for the rest of their lives, which I get. I mean, it would be political suicide to walk in and say, I'm getting rid of that law because I don't think it's right and it's not fair for kids. It would be seen as soft on education. It would be seen as somebody that is trying to water things down, as opposed to simply saying, no, I'm just focusing on the right things. I'm focusing on the outcomes and what we're actually chasing. So yeah, I know I'm not going to win any political offices with this stance. I know I'm not. But I would also challenge and say, but I'm also focusing on the right things, which is not necessarily just giving more money to the curriculum companies. I was also told recently, Dave, you're never going to get a job working in at one of the big publishers. You're right. Nor do I want to. Because a few years ago, I had the opportunity to basically do undercover boss with one of the big names out on the Pacific Northwest. And I learned that 80% of their revenue comes from intervention programs. This is one of the big assessment companies where 80% of its revenue comes from intervention, which means they measure things purposely to say kids are struggling, so we need to provide you interventions so that kids will eventually be able to pass the test that we created. I mean, I want you to think about that. They create an assessment that is intentionally focused on showing that kids have deficits, because 80% of their revenue is derived from people then saying, well, then I need to go find an intervention to support that, which is what happens when we start measuring the things that don't matter. It's easy to come up with intervention programs that focus on fluency and phonemic awareness. It is difficult to come up with intervention programs that allow kids to explore the world in real, authentic ways. You're not going to be able to buy a package program that's going to allow kids to receive that sort of intervention. So I just want you to question, what is it that we're actually after? Are we after enriching kids' lives, or are we after enriching curriculum companies? There's a big difference there in which one funnels and feeds the politicians. So yeah, I'm not going to become president or governor or school board member or any of those things, nor am I going to go work in the Pacific Northwest selling curriculum companies. However, hopefully, educators and teachers will start questioning what they do and why they do it.
I agree with that. And I would actually add on, now I'm supporting your argument with you, Dave. So here you go.
So what people, this is how poking the bear works. Yeah, just break them down until they say, I agree with you.
Them down and then they end up agreeing. But this is honestly like, and I've had this conversation, and we've had it about grading and assessment. I've had it about teaching writing. I've had it about teaching reading, thinking, whatever you want to talk about. It kind of all boils down to the same idea. What is more rigorous because we love that word in education. Let's have some rigorous curriculum. And like, it really, like, it makes me like itchy when people start talking about that, because the idea of rigor is not kids that are regurgitating and just doing drill and skill over and over and over again. That's not rigor. And it never, ever will be, because it's not engaging at a higher level of thought. And when you talk about things like critical thinking, when we talk about the ways that we want our kids to engage with reading and with content and with the world, we want critical thinking. We want an evaluation of sources or of source material. We want an analysis of what's going on. We want these higher order thinking skills, which you said, and you're correct, are really hard to make a test or assessment that measures, because they are hard skills. They're difficult things for kids and adults to do. The idea that we're going to sit back and we're going to analyze the differences or the similarities between two things and evaluate the effectiveness of a source material or the bias in a source material, most adults don't do that. So when we're talking about teaching kids to do those things, we have a bunch of adults who are out for a profit, let's be realistic here, that are like, well, that's really hard to measure, so we should just measure the thing that we can, which is the ability to recall what was read before. Recall is the lowest level of thinking that you can find. It is. It's the lowest. That it is what it is. If anybody's familiar with that hierarchy, you know, recall is the lowest one. So do we want students that are just really, really good at recall? Or do we want kids that actually have developed the ability to evaluate and analyze and think critically? Critical literacy is literally my whole thing in my class. Is that what we're aiming for here? And that's the part where you and I are going to agree, because we both agree that assessments don't measure the right things. And that because the assessments don't measure the right things, schools don't measure the right things, because that's where we get our funding. And I argue about this a lot, but our schools are funded in the wrong way. And we get our resources from the wrong places, because we don't value educators as professionals, because we don't think that we should have to put in that time and effort to develop materials that actually make our kids think. Whatever the reason might be, we aren't going about it in the right way. And that, I will agree, that part is overrated.
And I think, Caitlin, you did an amazing job of even teeing up some of the future conversations we should have, right? Because the idea of how do we value educators? I have a feeling that we'll actually see a lot of that similar, but very differently as well. I've made some statements recently about teachers calling in right before holiday weekends and the impact that has and how that makes my blood boil. I've made the statement that I don't necessarily think that teacher pay is why so many teachers are leaving the classroom, which is another interesting conversation for us to have. We've talked about grading and assessment, and a lot of that is written about in our book as well, where we share our perspectives, but ultimately we share our perspective because we want people to push back. You know, I'm super excited about this book. I'm just going to say, I'm going to plug it real quick, because the way the book is designed, you share your two cents. There it is. Yeah. If you're watching this right now, you can see it. You share your two cents. I share my two cents. And then we literally have blank pages for people to listen and have conversations with their peers, their teaching team, their loved ones, and share with me your perspectives so they can write down other people's perspectives. And then also some pages for them to then write their own ideas and their own thoughts. So if you're not a published author, buy this book and you can write your own thoughts in it. You've got your words in a book. You can go sell it, resell it. We don't care, whatever, do your thing. But that's ultimately the goal. It's not a book where you're highlighting and saying amen to our thoughts. We are putting our thoughts out there so that you can push back, because we understand that oftentimes evaluation comes before reflection in the hierarchy. It's easier to evaluate and judge somebody else before you look yourself in the eye and say, but what do I really believe? It's easier to be critical of others. So we put ourselves out there and say, be critical of us, push back, disagree. That's fine. But now, instead of just saying what you're anti or what you're against, now tell us what you're for. That's hard. It's a lot easier to say you don't like something. Now tell us what you are for. And when you can put your words and what you're for on the page, then you can lean in and have those conversations. So I'm excited to keep this going and debating a lot of things with you, listening to your perspective, breaking you down for 45 minutes until you eventually say, Dave, you're right. All the things, because I, first of all, I tremendous respect for you. I think that you are truly the smartest person around. So just being able to lean in and listen to you always makes me feel a little bit smarter at the end.
Hey, I agree. There's nobody else that I would rather discuss these things with, because I feel like every time I talk to you, I'm thinking about everything that I've never considered before in my own opinion. And I think too, that's another piece that like I just want to highlight, is that coming up with what you believe is incredibly difficult. It really is, especially when you don't know where to begin. And Dave, I love that you said like, that's why we put our ideas out there, so that you can evaluate and then use that as like your springboard. But I would also add that in addition to just knowing what you think, it's so much more valuable to be able to suss out why you believe it, because that's been a huge piece of my development as an educator. And yes, it started with evaluating other people's ideas, but it helped me because I would wonder, why is it that I don't agree with this? Yeah. What aspect of this is not sitting well with me? And then from there, I was able to develop, yes, what I believe, but it came from a place of why? Why do I believe something different? And why is it so important that we consider this other opportunity or this other way of thinking or this other perspective? And I want so many more people to be doing that, because it is so easy to say like, no, you're wrong. But it's so much harder to be like, and here's what I believe and why I believe it.
Yeah.
And then engage from there. It's really hard to engage in a conversation when you have no idea what you think or why you think it.
So oftentimes we resort back to, I just believe it because it's what I've always believed, or because somebody told it to me, or it worked best for me. And we're so worried about being perceived as ignorant or unintelligent because we don't know, or we're willing to change our minds. When I do workshops, one of the activities I do in a lot of my workshops is this unlearning activity, where I make people think back to a time in childhood and to think back about something that they believed to be true that they later had to unlearn and realize it wasn't true. And it might be maybe around Christmas time, you believe in a jolly old man that you later had to unlearn, or this little fairy that would fly into your room when you lost a tooth and leave some money under the pillow. It might be some of those things, but it might even be things like, when I was growing up, I had teachers tell me that Pluto was a planet, and I believed Pluto was a planet until, a decade ago, these NASA scientists came out and said, nope, it's not. It's this mini dwarf, or whatever the case is. And some of us will still hold on to that truth and say, these scientists are wrong. Pluto is a planet. I will defend that to the death, because that's what I learned as a kid. I've got one when I was in kindergarten as a 5-year-old. I was even more obnoxious than I am now. I asked all the questions to all the people. I needed to know why for everything. And I was obsessed with Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot and outer space. And I remember going to my dad as a 5-year-old and randomly asking my dad, where does space begin? And my dad, I don't know if it was his honest answer, or if he was just trying to shut me up, or what the case was. He said, I don't know, like a mile in the air. So I ran with that up until second grade. And then in second grade, I had a teacher that was doing a lesson on the Rocky Mountains, and she was talking about Denver, Colorado, and how it's the Mile High City. And I remember as a 7-year-old thinking that Denver, Colorado looked like the home of the Jetsons. I pictured like flying cars and aliens all over the place, because I believed space began a mile in the air, and this is a city a mile up. And my world was rocked when I had to unlearn and realize, ooh, my dad might have been incorrect. All this thing that I've held on to might not be right. And it caused a lot of things to go on in my head, but eventually I had to unlearn it so that I can move forward and learn new things. And I think as adults, we think that that's immature if you have to unlearn things. But I'm here to tell you people, unlearning is the name of learning. You have to unlearn what you hold on to be true so you can learn new things to be true. Whether it's pedagogy and the conversation about learning styles, or what the prefrontal cortex really does, or we can go on and on and on about lots of things that we've been told to be true that, when we really examine it, maybe they're not as true as we thought. So I challenge you, lean into the conversations, lean into learning, go grab a book if you want to read a book and continue to educate yourself, or just keep listening to podcasts like this, or find a person and actually have a conversation. Heaven forbid, you say your school's a family, sit around the dinner table and have a conversation. That's a whole nother conversation for another day, I know. So... So Caitlin, just doing this project with you, writing the book, having conversations with you, talking to you all the time, I can just tell you, I am truly better, primarily for the things that we disagree on, that we find some happy medium on, that eventually we come around. And there have been many times when afterwards, like, oh man, maybe we do agree on that, which is awesome. And then there are many of those times when trying to fall asleep at night, I just can't, because now my mind is swirling with all the things that you flooded into my head, and it refines some of my thinking. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate you. And I appreciate you just your willingness to continue to have the tough conversations.
Dave, I ditto everything. I am a better educator, a better person because of our relationship and our friendship. And this project has helped me so immensely. I can't even tell you, because as a teacher, as a teacher in a classroom, it can be really, really difficult to feel like you have a voice and to feel like what you say is important. And that is something that doing this project with you and just your person and your attitude and your willingness to engage with me has just highlighted and helped me to realize over and over again, is that I am a teacher in a classroom, but I still have this voice and this ability to affect change, and not even just change in an institution, which obviously is an aim that I think a lot of us have, but also to affect change in myself and recognizing when maybe I've held a belief that wasn't the one that I needed to be dying on that hill. Maybe I've held a belief or a feeling about something or someone that can be changed or reversed or flip-flopped, if you want to call it that. But it's truly your willingness that has made me recognize that, and has made me recognize that regardless of your level of experience, regardless of what role you hold, what title you have a voice and it does matter. Mm. And to everybody listening, you have a voice and it does matter. And it does matter to Dave and I, especially. And if you are someone that is like, yes, I want to share that, I want to share what I think, I want to engage in a conversation, know that the two of us are always available for that, because it is something that we both firmly believe in. And I would love for other teachers to have that experience that I've had with you.
Was that your call out to people to say, reach out to us? If you want to have one-on-one conversations, we're happy to, or even come on here if you want to have a debate or a conversation. Oh, I love that idea.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you're listening or watching this right now and you're like, ooh, I have a hot button topic, or I've been wanting to have this conversation in my school, but I'm afraid to have that conversation there. Can we start the conversation here? Absolutely. As weird as it is, I think sometimes it is easier to have some of these hard conversations with people that you don't necessarily work with or get to talk to every single day. So if you want to try out a conversation with us, poke us, push back, then in whatever you're watching this on, whether it's social media or YouTube or listening to this on the podcast, in the notes, we'll have ways that you can reach out to us. Reach out, tell us what you want to debate, and we can bring you on the screen with us. We can have the conversation. You can change our minds. We can change your minds, or we can all just say, huh, I still respect you, even though I disagree, and we can still leave a little bit better. So I'm excited about that. That's a great idea.
I love it. Yeah, come talk to us.
All right. So Caitlin, once we get off air here, we got to figure out what we're going to argue about next. I've got a lot of things that I want to bring up and hear your perspective on, and a lot of things I think you're wrong about that I can't wait to try to convince you and bring you over to the dark side on. So you ready to have some more conversations in the future?
I can't wait.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, people. Well, if you want to go pick up a copy of Poking the Bear, it is available on Amazon and all the places. So go find it, go check it out, lean into the conversations, be ready to have the uncomfortable conversations, but be comfortable experiencing what's uncomfortable. So I don't know if that makes sense or not. It just came out.
It makes sense. Okay. I love it.
Awesome. All right, people, go lean into those conversations, make people better, make yourself better. We appreciate you. Hey, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Lasting Learning Podcast. If you're interested in learning more, feel free to listen to additional episodes or to go check out schmitto.net. at schmittou.net. I hope that you will engage in the conversations that matter most. Remember, there are no taboo topics in education.